We're going to eat and talk. It's recording right now.
Okay.
Would you like to hold the microphone or would you like me to hold it?
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Welcome to Straight Talk with your host, Patty Foster.
With me now is Rosa Bloom, Holocaust survivor, and she and her husband, Ossi, were some of the founding members of the Holocaust Museum of Dallas. Rosa, let me simply welcome you. Thank you for being a part of my interview program today.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here, and I hope we'll be able to reach as many people as I can. Maybe my story will give them a little hope, courage, and energy for life. Because that's just all I'm looking for, and that's all I live for. And I'm grateful to be here and be part of the United States of America.
That's a beautiful blessing you've spoken on the listeners and the viewers at the very beginning of the program.
Thank you.
So, Rosa, talk to us, take us back in time, and tell us, how did Hitler's plans and his agendas, how did he affect you? What did it do to you? What happened?
What I think it happened somehow his plan was different and it worked different. Mm. It worked. He did destroy 6 million people. But out of that 6 million, something good came out of too. Because for me to survive and to live and to be happy, I had to remember one thing. Through him, because of his injustice and what he did to the Jewish people and to all the humanity, Israel was born in 1948. He was born in Germany, on his land, something he wanted to keep always pure. And instead of being pure, it became the ground of future generations for other generations to come. And in Augsburg, Germany, Israel became a country. And through that, I feel, it was a big price to pay for what we received. But in every gain, there's a loss. And in every loss, there's a gain.
What were some of the things that you gained? What were some of the things you lost?
What we gained is we suddenly realized who we are and what we are capable to do. And we out of the ashes, we gathered ourselves together. I lived normal with my husband 60 years in United States. I came to United States for reasons of my own. There was a reason why I had to come to United States. I didn't went to Israel. I intended really to go to Israel, but I didn't. I came to United States. In the United States, I met my husband, and I was very happy for 60 years. I lost him last year. March the 28th, he passed away after 60 years marriage. It was very happy. We were both the same age. He was 20 when he got married, and I was 21. Mm. We lived together. Mm. Very happy through all the 60 years. Mm. Out of the 60 years, I had 5 children. 2 children, 2 boys and 1 girl passed away in birth. And out of there, I was able to learn to have 2 normal other children. I have 2 boys, and they are living a normal life right here in the United States.
Well, tell us about your life, Rosa. How old were you when all of this horror started to your family?
Between 10 and 13. 14, I was already in Auschwitz. And Auschwitz, I was not old enough to work, but the crematorium door closed in the front of me. I was in the outside door when the crematorium closed. It was a very hard pill. I battled with Mengele. I wanted to go in. I couldn't, the doors were locked. So he sent me to go to work. And so he hit me over my head. He brain damaged me from it. But I think you should know that.
Yes.
I got brain damaged on my left side. My left hemisphere has been hit. It's not noticeable when you talk to me, but it's noticeable in my everyday life. I had to learn to work around it. I didn't use it as a handicap. I never looked at it as a handicap. I looked at it as a weapon to survive, an instrument that I survived on.
Was there a story, Rosa, about your hair and when you had gotten off the train? Tell us something about your hair, and it was down and you wanted to put it back up or something. What was that story?
As the train stopped, my grandmother looked outside. When she looked outside, everything, it was such a serene place. It was an Auschwitz-Birkenau. It was a very serene place. On one side, the gypsies were playing. On the other side, an orchestra was playing. And everything, if you go into a resort area, nobody accepts you the way they did. I mean, they were really putting up the red carpet for us. And my grandmother looked out, and I had long hair. My hair was, you could sit on it, that's how long mine. I had two ponytails on two sides. And my grandmother said to me, she says, "You know something? Let's comb your hair." I didn't comb it for 4 days. And I said, "Okay, Grandma, let's comb my hair." So I undone my hair, and as soon as I undone my hair, the door opened up. And you can imagine how that the fresh air, when it came in, for 4 days and four nights, we gathered all our waste and pots and pans. We were in a kettle train, and the train didn't have any water or toilets. So we gathered it all in pots and pans. And so you can imagine the odor that it took place in that in that area. And when the door opened up, everybody just pushed. And I got pushed out. When I got pushed out, my hair was floating in every direction. So I told my grandmother, "You know, Grandma, I cannot go like that. I have to tie my hair up." She said, "Go ahead and find a rope and find something to tie your hair up." I said, "Okay." And I got separated away from my family. By being separated away, I went back on the train where I came from, because there was a woman that had three babies. And she was waiting for somebody to pick her up. In the meantime, a little bus came by. It looked like a little ambulance. And when it came by, it had a Red Cross on one side, the Red Cross on the other side. So it was kind of, you would call it more an ambulance. And when they opened up the back door, it was full of corpses. They gathered up the corpses from the people, from the other people, from the train. And I was on the top of the train. I couldn't get off. And I just had to wait out till the bus drove away. And they took that woman with the three babies and they pushed her out on the top of the corpses. And that had disturbed me tremendously. I lost conscious of myself. I didn't know what I was doing. I became very disorientated. In my mind, the only thing I could see is evil. There's lots of evil going on here. It's not what it looks like. It's not what it looks like. And I kept on repeating it in my mind. It's not what it looks like. It's not like what it looks like. And I kept on, I didn't know how I walked. And I kept on browsing around the whole area there. I don't know where I was. Finally, I heard a bad click. When I heard the click, what happened is the crematorium doors closed. And everything became silent. Even the Germans became silent there for a moment. Everybody, the older Jewish people were mumbling something. I didn't know what they were mumbling. Later in life, I asked a rabbi, to explain to me what the old people had mumbled. They had mumbled, they were saying the last prayer. The Jewish prayer is called Bura Dai Emes. And they have to repeat it 3 times. And that's the words. In Hebrew, it's called Bura Dai Emes. You repeat it 3 times after a dead person. And what it means in English, God, even in death, you are righteous. And that's what the older people were mumbling. In the meantime, I wanted to get into the door. Mengele ran after me. And he said to me, he says, you are chosen to go to work. And I said, but my parents aren't there. He says, but you cannot go there. And he pushed me over on the working side. I turned around and I smuggled myself back to that door. And he came back and he says, I told you, you are chosen to work. And he took a stick and he hit me over my head. And that's how my head got split wide open. On the right, on the left hemisphere, the hair never grew on that side. And I went back and I was bleeding very, my blood was coming up very bad from my head. And I would wipe myself off, and a few minutes later, my hair was cut off. And they told us to take everything we own and put it in one place, and they're going to let us come back to it, but they never did. And we were pushed out in different doors. They cut our hair, but it was not done by women. It was done by men. The disgrace that they brought on us to that moment, it was unreal. I cannot explain it. I will never understand that why they did that. But I guess for the first moment of our youth life, we were faced with men doing the work. They cut our hair off, they cut under the arm, and every place the hair grew. And so that's how it was. And that's how I got into Auschwitz, and I worked there. And I worked there for 6 months. The first few months, when I arrived, I remember a woman trying to tell us something. But she was so sophisticated. Maybe if she would tell it to me today, maybe it would make sense. But to the moment she was telling me that time, it didn't. It's just when you're sick, you're not sick. She was giving us a very indifferent situation about the whole thing. She tried to put something across us, but we were too young to understand it. Instead that we condemned her. And I think in some ways some of the people tried to help us and didn't know how. It's not an easy place to be there or be a leader or to be somebody that does work for other people to do the right thing. It's sometimes very hard to explain things. And that's what we were. We sometimes you hear tales, the couple, the this and that, there were bad people, mean people. In their own way they were mean, and the same time they wanted to help us and didn't know how.
After you were there, tell us about when did you leave? What was your last time like, your last day like there, and how did everything happen that you were released?
I was not released from Auschwitz. Okay. I was working in the kitchen in Auschwitz. And then after that, a lot of transfers have got less. And they transferred some of the people out, and I was not chosen to work in the kitchen. I smuggled myself in. But the way I did it, I used to get in the afternoon very hungry. And I remember sitting down and thinking about the old country, home, everything I connected with something from home. I come from a farm country. And I remember grass and things growing in the ground. And I remember when we got real hungry too at home, because I come from a family of 7 children, we used to always go to the garden and take stuff out of the garden like carrots and radishes and take them to the river, wash them off and eat them. and that helped us quite a bit. We did all kind of little crazy things. And so I remember some of the things, and I thought to myself, now what would that hurt me to find some of the roots or grass or something from the ground that would help my hunger? But hunger was very, it's a very powerful instrument, hunger. And so I find, you couldn't find grass every place. It was not growing because it was in a small territory. We was housed something like 45,000 people. Everything was trimmed around. I find the roots sometime, and I kind of took the stones around it and cleaned it off with my fingers and chewed on it. That helped. But then I looked around the kitchen. It was in a restricted area that you were not allowed to go there, but the grass was growing. So later in the day, everything calmed down and everything was quiet, I ran over there and I used to smuggle myself in and take a handful of grass and ran out. And that was my daily supply. And it worked very well. But then one day I came there, and they were tattooing the people that work for the kitchen. I was not tattooed. And a woman comes up to me with a rope, with her name on it, and she says to me, she says, would you like to work in the... No, you have a sister? And I said, no, I don't. He said, would you like to work in the kitchen? And I looked at her. She was by 6 feet tall girl, strong. And here I was 15 years old. I said, work in the kitchen. I didn't have the choice to say yes or no. She threw the rope on me, and it landed on my arm, and I picked it up. If I would run away, I ran away from work. I couldn't afford that. So I put the rope on. It was going all the way to the floor and a little over. And I had a rope around my waist, and I took that. It was for a reason that I had it there. And I put it around it, and I pulled everything up, and I walked in the kitchen. I'm working in the kitchen. And as I walked in, somebody says, if you exchange yourself, give your own name. Do not use a phony name. Use your own name. Please do not use phony names. Use your own name, because I know some of them have exchanged themselves. I was one of them. And I used my own name. The only thing I didn't give my city where I was born, because it was a long word, and the city next to me, 50 miles away from my house, was shorter. It was called Daesh, D-A-H, and my hometown was Domokosh. And I couldn't spell it. I was so nervous and so upset. So I said Daesh. That's the only thing I didn't give. But I gave my name. Everything is regular. Mine, everything. In Auschwitz, I'm registered. And they registered me. And they gave me a tattoo on my arm. And I was so happy when I got the tattoo. The reason I was happy is I thought to myself, now, I used to always have an idea, and that's why I used to always been called daydreamer. I used to make up my own little stories about life and about certain things. And I always had my idea that I will be, they tattooed me, they have my name, they have where I lived. Now they won't kill me. They may work me to death, but they're not going to kill me. Straight out. I won't get into the crematorium like other people will. Without the name of it. I was very happy. It gave me hope for the future. And I interpreted myself. It was not true. But in my mind, it was real. And it worked for quite a while. And we were there for about 6 months. I worked in that kitchen. And then the transfers are coming less. And the Russians were not far from Auschwitz. You could see at night the burning things, because I worked at night sometime. We could see the skies lit up, and it was not just lights. It was something else about lighting up the skies. We didn't have any newspaper. We didn't have any politics. If we wanted to know something, we went to the tallest to find something. Mm-hmm. Let's put the show again. We went to the tallest to find the news came in there. Everybody was giving news out there. So anyway, we saw that at night. And so the trans, so they came one day and they said they need 200. Now, if they took away 200 people, you are all right. You went with that transport. If they took out 300 people, it's okay too. If they took out 1,000, you stayed away. Because 1,000 meant they could go to the crematorium. So we were well trained already. We already find out a lot of little loopholes. What other people in the camp didn't know, because we worked in the kitchen, we find out lots of things the other people didn't. And so always when you saw a big transport, you stayed away. You only went to little ones. So one day they came and they said that they want to choose 200 girls from the kitchen girls, to take them to Dachau, to Germany, to work in a munition factory. And I told all the girls that, let's go. Let's get out of here. I think it's time to go. And I went out with the last transport from Auschwitz on a train. I didn't dare march. Right after me, it was already late in the fall, right after me, people had to march by foot. They were taken out by foot. But I was lucky I went out with the last train from Auschwitz.
How old were you?
15. Not even 15. The war ended the following year. And I was liberated by the 4th Army. Eisenhower's Army. May. Sometime in May. It was more, I think it was May the 1st of that part got liberated. I didn't get liberated. We were left in a, I had to go, I marched for a couple of days. And we were left in a school for 3 or 4 days with nobody till a little soldier had find us. He had gum in his mouth and he wanted to know what the camp is. And so I took him in, and I have never seen somebody holler. I didn't know English, but he hollered for help. He was attacked by 500 girls. I don't think he ever forgot that, and I never will forget the little red-headed guy with gum in his mouth. He was something else special to see. If anybody remembers anything like that, please let me know. I would like to see him. He was no older than I was. He may look young to me because I was already considering myself an old woman. For a long time there, instead of me being 15 and 16, I never looked at myself as being that. I worked so hard and I had such a hard life that I looked at myself older. I never even realized I was so young. And the war ended in May and I became 16 the following August. That's how old I was when it happened. But I didn't look at myself that. I was looking myself in the 20s because I was created to look myself old.
So now years have gone by, and Rosa, you and Osi were among the founding members of the Dallas Holocaust Museum. Tell us about that.
We decided, there was one guy who called the meeting, and we got together in the Jewish Family Service. He was called the founder, but we were the one, the same people that got together. We all got together, but same people mainly donated money. And the donation was every one of them had to first donate $5,000. That was the limit. So there was same people. Now, they told us like this. The one who can afford more, give more. The one who cannot afford more, give 5,000. That was the limit they had. And we were the one of the 5,000 of the Cheyenne people that donated $5,000 or more. My husband said, I don't remember more or less, but we donated the $5,000. That was a standard. I cannot call what, there was some of them that donated more, some of them not less, but more. And that's how the Jewish Holocaust Museum started. And the reason we started that, we gathered up together and we decided that we would like to leave something behind for the people to remember us that we had passed through the city. Mm-hmm. And we've been here. And we wanted to have a memory for them. Mm-hmm. As much as for us, too.
Well, talk to us and all of our listeners and viewers and everyone listening right now. Tell us about, you are a Jew, one of God's people. Tell us about the way you experience God today in your life.
I experience God as a wonderful person. He's not a, I don't know what you call him. He's a God for everybody. He's not just my God. He's everybody's God. Nobody ever see their God. I didn't see mine. We all have the invisible God. And we all have the same one. We may call him different names, but it's welcome to do that. It does not matter what you call him or what you, how you pray for it. As long as you pray and believe. And if you really believe strong enough and you wait, you turn, things will happen. And I experienced wonderful things for me. And to the present time, I'm home. I have a broken arm. I was very lost when it happened. I called on one of my friends and she came, but I was worried about my son. I begged her to help me. And she did came and she brought me a bottle of aspirin. She brought me a bottle of Tylenol. And she brought me a piece of chocolate. I will always be indebted for that much on her. And she listened to me. And I told her, from all the people that I know, I ask of you, help me. I need help. I need help with my oldest son. He's deaf and he needs food. He doesn't work. He doesn't go out of the house. He's completely mute. He doesn't hear at all. And he stays in the house and I'm worried about him. I guess I scare the poor woman very much. I like to apologize to her. But she never called me. And then the next day or the same day, I took my son to the doctor. I went with him. I still was walking and still moving around. And I went to the doctor. When I came back, I couldn't urinate. And my son came and he took me to the hospital. And what happened is, because of the break, my calcium depleted in my body. And they had to put me on calcium or whatever, I don't know. But the doctors x-rayed my arm and they find that my arm was broken. And I stayed in the hospital for 3 days. Beautiful care they took at me. And right away, they came and they helped me with exercise. And when I came home, they assigned Medicare to me. And Medicare nurses, but I don't call them nurses, I call it angels from God. I had two angels from God, and a third one is a nurse. And they came, the nurse didn't came as much, but the other ones came twice a week. And they helped me with my arm. And if everything goes all right, in another week or two, I'll be able to drive and consume my own work. And I'm so sorry for that woman. I scared her so bad that she never called me back.
So, Rosa, if someone would like to get in contact with you, how would they go about this, Rosa?
I try to keep as private as I can. I'm not a good person to ask for help. That's the worst thing of my part. But people are so scared to give other people help. They should. I don't need the money. I never asked for anything financially. No. The people themselves, if I ask them for something, if I want something, from her all I wanted, maybe just a word. I have a lady here that every night, she's 88 years old, and every night she called me up and she wanted to know how I'm doing. She couldn't come to help me because she doesn't drive at night. And daytime she has her own problems. She's diabetic. She's all kind of diseases that she has. But she needs somebody to talk to once in a while. You need somebody, maybe a loaf of bread, maybe a dozen eggs, or something to bring in for you and the house to have. Maybe rent to the store for something. And I was mobile enough to rent with them. I moved around. Because my arm is broken, that doesn't mean it put me out of commission. I still took care of my own chores. I took my own bath. I washed my own hair. I dressed myself. I ate myself with my left hand instead of my right hand. And what I couldn't do with my right hand, I did with my left hand. And I kept on going. And people should help each other just personally. Don't get scared when somebody asks you for help. It's not always what it seems like. Find out before you close the door on people. Mm-hmm. It's very important that we should entertain each other. And everything that is so important in life is free. It's all for the give and take. And there's no money involved in it. And I don't know why the people always felt that the only reason somebody called you is because you're up to money. That's not it. In my case, never, not ever did I want money. All I wanted themselves. And that's what I was always misunderstood. I hope I'll be able to relate it to people. Help each other just personally and give whatever you give anything you can give, and give it free. And that's very important.
That's right. It's very important. Well, dear Rosa, let's wrap up today with just your talking about anything that you want to, closing remarks you'd like to share with others.
All I have comment, love each other, honor each other. Everybody should live for each other, too. We live so little for each other. It's so important. Don't be in a hurry. Life doesn't run away. It stays with us as long as it will stay with us. Once it's gone, it's gone. And you cannot bring him back. I cannot bring back who I love very much. But he is with me still. He died in my arms. I loved him very much all the 60 years. I respected him. He was a grateful man. He always used to say, if somebody stretches out your hand to give him something, give him something if you can. If you can. And I make sure not to think that I'm just talking off my head. If you can, help him. But if you cannot, because sometimes it can be 100 people will stretch out a hand to you and doesn't need it. But there will be 101 that you missed. So don't miss the one that really needs it. And be careful when somebody stretches out your hand. Help them if you can. If not, move away. But it's both ways. Do not desert them because he reached out to you. If he reached out, take time out a little bit. Give him a little time of yourself and help him. And not financial. Not everybody's asking for financial help. Sometimes we don't even know when we are so confused what we need. We just need to talk and lean at each other and love each other.
So on those positive notes of we needing each other, we are wrapping up this segment of Straight Talk with Patty. Rosa Blum, thank you for sharing your story with the listeners.
Thanks for listening to Straight Talk with your host, Patty Foster. Patty is a motivational speaker, writer, musician, and has an amazing testimony of God's faithfulness. For more information, log on to www.pattyfoster.com.
I really don't know anything else what I can say to help the tomorrow. But the way I was taught is, today is ready cash. Tomorrow is a bonus. Yesterday is a canceled check. And if we remember the three things, yesterday a canceled check, today ready cash, tomorrow a bonus. And that's what life is all about. Thank you very much.